Hello, this is Mike Arrington from TechCrunch. Today I have the privilege of getting a few minutes to talk with Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney about his positions on technology-related issues. Governor Romney, thank you for taking the time to talk with me today, and welcome.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be with you.
So I noticed the new Iowa and New Hampshire polls were released yesterday, and that you continue to have a very large lead among Republican candidates. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. I'm pleased that the places I spend most time in, I'm doing better. If it were the other way around, where I'd spent the least time I was doing better, I'd be in trouble.
I have five or six questions for you, and I'd like to just jump right in. I think the first one is fairly broad. The U.S. technology industry, of course, has been a world leader, and a lot of the growth has been through international markets, particularly over the last 10 to 20 years. What would you do as president to advance these efforts?
Well, first it's important to communicate, as you do to your audience, that the trade and opening markets to American goods is essential. The only way America is going to remain the world superpower is if we can compete globally. And so I want to open more markets to our goods, and I will negotiate with other nations to do so. At the same time, I want to make sure that our trading with other nations is done on a fair basis. And when a nation like China does not honor our intellectual property rights, then we're going to have to get serious with our Chinese friends and say, guys, you just can't do that or you're going to suffer consequences in our market. So we're going to have to fight to make sure that our products are protected and our technology is protected, but also do not close down foreign markets. Open them up. We can compete around the world.
Okay, great. Let's jump into internet taxes. Some news today on that, actually. The 1998 Internet Tax Freedom Act bars federal, state, and local governments from taxing internet access and from imposing discriminatory internet-only taxes, things like bit taxes, bandwidth taxes, email taxes. It doesn't, of course, prohibit states from collecting sales tax on e-commerce and things like that. It was twice extended by Congress and actually was set to expire this Thursday. But last week, the Senate voted to extend the ban, and then this morning, the House voted 402-0 to approve the bill as well for a seven-year extension. I'd just like to get your position on internet-only taxes.
Well, I think the indication of the House vote indicates that most Americans are of the view that the internet taxes of the type you describe are not something we want to see. I haven't put out a specific position on that particular issue, but I do not want to see internet-only taxes, as you describe them, or access fee or email charges and so forth. We do enough taxing in this country. Let's not add more taxes. I'd rather see the tax burden in our nation reduced rather than expanded.
Seems like along general party lines, the Republicans wanted a permanent ban. The Democrats wanted, you know, something less than that, and they compromised on 7 years. Do you have any particular position on whether the ban should be permanent?
Well, I think it makes more sense to make it permanent. I think, in fact, what the Democrats were doing is recognizing that if they do it every 7 years, then they can go out and get contributions from companies that care and then vote for it every 7 years. It's an old political ploy, which is bring it back for a vote regularly and go back and hit people up for contributions.
I didn't think about it that way. That's interesting. Let's jump into visas, probably the most politically or at least one of the most sensitive issues in Silicon Valley, at least. The H-1B in particular, it's a non-immigrant visa that allows U.S. employers to seek temporary help from skilled foreigners. They have to have the equivalent of a U.S. bachelor's degree to qualify for the H-1B. We used to give, in the late 90s, we were giving $100,000, $150,000 a year. There's probably demand for almost $200,000 a year. In the last couple of years, the U.S. quota for that has been brought down to $65,000, and that was last year and this year. And a lot of Silicon Valley startups and large companies in particular are saying that it's really hurting them with their hiring. Proponents of the program, you know, say it helps U.S. businesses stay competitive, and it helps avoid outsourcing. It also brings some of the brightest, the world's best and brightest to the U.S. Quite a few of the most successful entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley actually started off as H-1B visa holders. The other side says that it can take jobs away from U.S. citizens and lowers wages. What's your position on H-1B visas in general?
I like H-1B visas. I like the idea of some of the best and brightest in the world coming here. I'd rather have them stay permanently than just come and go. But I believe that our visa program is designed to help us solve gaps in our employment pool, and where there are individuals that have skills that we do not have in abundance here, I'd like to bring those folks in and have them contribute to our economy. Ultimately, we're in a competitive battle with the rest of the world, a battle where we have to remain the most powerful nation in the world. And the only way a nation like ours stays ahead forever is with having superior technology and innovation. And if we need additional folks that have skill that can contribute to our country, then by all means, let's welcome them in. And if we're seeing that our own kids are not competing in certain areas, let's help our kids understand what they're going to need to do to become competitive.
Do you think the quota should be increased? Do you think there should be no quota? Have you looked in? I mean, this is sort of, we're getting sort of niche now and into the details, but should we allow everyone in that's qualified?
Well, I would like to see us increase the number of people that receive visas of an H-1B nature, and people who can provide skills and experience that we may not have. As to the exact number, in my view, that would follow a review of a number of things. One is, what's our overall economy doing? What's happening to the size of our workforce? Number two, what's happening to our own capacity to deal in the jobs that are being requested? And then number three, what are the demands from our employers? How many additional folks do they need? So you'd have to do an assessment of that on a regular basis. But my overall view is we need more H-1B visas, not less.
Okay, great. There's an issue that we talk about quite a bit in Silicon Valley around the way venture capital is taxed. Venture capital is clearly the lifeblood of Silicon Valley, allows startups to form and grow without worrying about their initial capital needs. Without that capital, most public technology companies in the U.S. today would probably not exist or be in a much different form. One of the benefits, though, of venture capital is that the way that they get their gains on their fund, they end up paying only capital gains on that interest, even though they're not actually investing their own money. They're just investing their limited partners' money. It's clearly a big incentive to be a successful venture capitalist because they're taxed at capital gain rates far below the normal income tax rates. Congress in the early, I think late spring, started to look at the issue to see if changes are needed. Some prominent VCs, Fred Wilson being one of them, have actually come out and said they're taxed too low today and that they should be paying, you know, normal income tax rates on what is effectively income. I guess I have two questions for you. The first is, what's your position on the capital gains rate in general?
I don't believe that we should increase our capital gains tax rate. My view is, in fact, that for people earning $200,000 a year and less, we should eliminate the capital gains tax, the dividends tax, and the tax on interest altogether. I'd like Americans to be able to save their money and not to get taxed on their savings. And with regards to the carried interest associated with venture capital and real estate and private equity, I do not believe in raising taxes. And it is a capital gain because those individuals do make an investment. It's a small investment, but they make an investment of their own capital, and I would treat capital gains like capital gains instead of trying to categorize them as ordinary income.
Okay, great. One more question, actually, then I have a fun question. But on renewable energy, this is, strictly speaking, we're talking about science now, not just the Internet and sort of the area that I cover, but it's a big area, it's an important area. I guess the big question is, what would you do to encourage U.S. innovation into renewable and sustainable energy sources?
Well, first of all, as I mentioned a moment ago, the way a nation like ours stays ahead permanently of other nations is by having superior technology and innovation. And one of the areas that's certainly going to be true in relates to energy. And I would like to see the federal government substantially increase its investment in basic science, basic research, relating to energy efficiency, energy production, energy distribution. And I will substantially increase funding in those areas. I'll also work on public-private partnerships to, for instance, put in place coal-to-liquid capacity, potentially even nuclear power plants, to, if you will, prime the pump again to get nuclear power plants online and under construction again in this country. So I believe that we're going to have to become a partner to encourage the development of these additional sources of energy. At the same time, I want to create incentives for individuals and businesses to become more energy efficient. When I was governor, for instance, I said, look, anybody who buys a car that's a high-mileage vehicle, whether it's a hybrid or not, if it's a high-mileage vehicle, I would waive the sales tax and the annual excise tax. Let's give people incentives to get much more fuel-efficient vehicles.
Okay. Here's a more politically sensitive question. But, you know, based on current science, which I know is still forming, do you think carbon emissions should be taxed?
I'm not looking at a carbon emissions tax, no. I'm instead not looking at increasing taxes, but instead finding ways to develop new technology and to encourage efficiency. But that's not the course which I've laid out at this point.
Okay, great. I guess that brings us to the most important question I have to ask you, which is, Governor Romney, Mac or PC?
I have a PC. My sons have a Mac and swear by it, but I have a couple of PCs.
One of your sons is on a Mac, or most of them are?
I've got three out of the five boys, I believe, are on Macs, and they swear by them. But you know, I'm a creature of habit. I got my PC.
That's I have to say I'm slightly disappointed, and that's going to hurt you in Silicon Valley, but help you, you know, at least in Texas where Dell is. So, do you have an iPod?
I do.
I guess of course you do. What's on it? What are you listening to right now? What's sort of the albums that you've downloaded and are listening to?
You know, what I typically download is country music as well as 1960s music. I'm a baby boomer, so the Beatles and the Stones and some of the old groups from the 1960s are my favorites. I listen to them, and I listen to country. Those are the and then I have some inspirational music as well, but those are the highlights for me.
All right, great. Governor Romney, thank you very much for your time.
Good to be with you. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.